Siren Radio.
Yes, that is what you're listening to. Shaylee McKenzie, good morning.
Morning.
Excellent. Oh, what fun we've been having since the clock sprung forward. I had thought that actually maybe it was Phil Learness's line about it causes more coronary thromboses and heart attacks than anything else that's causing that whole system.
Yeah.
But the guarantee is that we can at least say now with due confidence and belief that he will deliver in his usual fantastic way, even though, as we were going to say yesterday when we were about to launch him into the show, he hasn't yet seen the latest Star Wars movie. He's
wow.
not even a Star Wars fan, so to speak. In fact, he was.
That's
all...
actually really surprising.
Oh Lord, I mean, Phil, what's the weather in Los Angeles? Let's not go down.
It's not raining Star Wars.
Exactly.
I almost had one of those coronary thromboses because of the time change. Upon realizing when I turned on my phone today that I had already missed your call for the midweek drive. Nevertheless, it is exciting to be with you for the morning edition, and it looks like you're having relatively chilly temperatures, what I would consider chilly, since we're going to have 23 degrees Celsius here. You're going to have a high of 9 degrees, I believe, with a low of 2, some light rain showers, and rather breezy throughout the day.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if that correlates with Gabriella's line in a few moments. But that is indeed the score line, so to speak, when it comes to the weather and so on. The other, of course, interesting thing that came out of the Chilpack Hollywood package that, of course, you can listen to, and indeed it is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, Shaylee, and various other people's as well, because that's the brand that they actually say, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
I like it.
Yeah,
personal.
I thought so. I scheduled this, and I brought in Ty Wilcox with It's a Mystery, because it was a mystery as to where was Phil Learness. So I thought that was very subtly done. It was almost as though he was performance theatre on radio. Very impressive. But apart from that, do you want to, I mean, because Shaylee, you're quite a Star Wars soul, aren't you, really?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Star Wars over Star Trek. Sorry, guys.
You see, Phil he was agonising. For the first 10 minutes of this week's Chilpack Hollywood Hour, very much not Fuzz Aldrin, who's almost like silly, although he did say, you know, which would he have actually chosen to do, spend the day inside with Fuzz Aldrin, or go and see the latest Star Wars movie, and Fuzz won. Pause down. But Phil, this thing, which I mean, was a revelation to me, certainly in terms of the whole sort of structure, etc. Why, I mean, you know, even saying the line that 40 years, he doesn't understand why it's not subject to the law of diminishing returns, that as the movies get worse, the box office takings increase.
No, I didn't say as they get worse, the box office get better. What I said was it's the only franchise in cinematic history that I can find where the box office does not reflect the quality. It is independent of it. Other franchises, if they release a bad film, they take a hit.
Except Tomb Raider, presumably. I mean, that'd be...
Oh, yeah.
And so it's independent of that. And I'm wondering why. I'm wondering what makes Star Wars different than every other franchise, especially because it's the franchise that everybody keeps trying to copy and failing at. So I'm curious about what it is that makes it unique. And so far, as you heard on the show, every answer that has been forthcoming is not unique to Star Wars, but there's got to be something unique because it does stand alone in that regard, where it doesn't matter how bad the movies are, they still perform at a certain level.
I feel like every Star Wars film that comes out, there is a new generation that can fall in love with the characterizations. And especially with the film like Rogue One, the actors and actresses that were played in there were relatively unknown. And so it sort of helped them to gain notability by being part of such an influential franchise, I feel.
So you're saying that each new set of movies, not only with the characters, but, see, this is, you actually opened the door to something interesting that my partner did not suggest. He suggested that it's the mythology, but the mythology has been embodied in other franchises, and they don't stand up. But it is an interesting idea that because they keep bringing in new blood, they are basically reintroducing these myths, these ancient myths, to brand new audiences. That's fascinating. So then it may be that indeed they do bleed viewers from time to time, but those are made up for by brand new viewers who are coming in.
Yeah, really, definitely.
And that is why Shaley's Chill Pack Hollywood is a whole new theme that you
can't
see.
Wow, Shaley, yeah? That is, I kid you not, in all the times that I brought this topic up, this is the first time anybody's hit me with something where I say, yes, that's unique.
Oh, thank you. So, I'm privileged.
Alex, what did she win? Tell her what she won.
She wins an all-expenses-paid trip to the delights of Countryside Links on Sunday, April the 8th, the official launch of Spring in Lincoln.
Nice.
Yeah?
Wow, I don't even know what that is. That's how fabulous it is.
Well, exactly. I mean, I feel as though the awesomeness there. It's just good that Phil, I could say good, but Phil was unable to join us last week when, of course, Gabriella was so excited because Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, was opening the Gibraltar Skywalk Bridge. Check it out on the web. You can actually see Luke Skywalker.
Oh, my goodness. He's opening shopping malls now. That's where it's come to for him. So can Shaley explain one other thing, or do I have to go to make way for Gabriella?
No, go on. One more. Yes.
Since you're on a roll, Shaley, can you explain to me what's going on with Brexit, and is there any chance that Brexit won't happen?
Oh, well, I was listening to the radio this morning, and then currently there's not really much going on. The deal on the table at the minute isn't as great as some parties would want it to be.
But our Prime Minister is visiting England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland in the one day. She's even going up to Newcastle just to see Ian Lennox.
Yes, to appeal for unity, but that means nothing to me. I mean, who doesn't appeal for unity? What leader goes and says, I guess our president, I'm sorry, never mind. Of course, our president travels around asking for divisiveness. But most leaders do ask for unity. But I'm curious, is the aim that maybe when all is said and done, there won't be a Brexit? Or are they actually just working hard for the best exit deal possible? What do you think?
I think it's definitely the latter, and from the sounds of it, she's not going to be able to please everybody, but that's just politics,
or as
hey?
Political pundits might say, David Davis walks into a bar and Brexit.
Nice.
Even I got that one.
Yeah, whoa, you see, proving that special relationship between the Chill Pack Hollywood team and filmmaker Phil Nearness and Siren Radio and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition just is founded on good, solid foundations. It's very good. Shaley, would you like to ask those two questions to Phil, even though I'm convinced he thinks of yourself as a Shirley as opposed to a Shaley? It's easily confused.
I'm saying Shaley. I'm trying, you know, look, I understand that my accent. Anyway, go ahead.
We'll get the Shaley McKenzie lyrics and sound bites all set up. It'll only be a matter of weeks before Shaley will receive the official Phil Dearness endorsement of you being a full midweek drivette.
I forgive you, Phil. It is a very difficult name. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Was I really butchering the pronunciation that much? I really thought I was doing a pretty good job. It's such a beautiful name. I mean, I am drunk as a skunk, and I have an open container of paint thinner next to me.
It's okay.
So it affects my performances. But yes, I've had a wonderful time, largely because of the paint thinner, and I'm sorry that I'm leaving and that your Skype doesn't work.
Yeah, this is the next week, Phil. Hopefully next week it'll be back to normal. Then again, it may not be. We don't know. Anything can happen in the next half hour. Phil Dearness.
The whole world's gone mad, Alex.
Have a splendid Easter break, and we'll see you in Easter week. Yes?
How come Easter is on April Fool's Day? This explains a lot of Sunday school to me all of a sudden.
You're only kidding.
Only kidding.
John Anderson and Vangelis Papathasiou, otherwise known as John and Vangelis, and State of Independence, pretty much the state that Gibraltar is always in, because it's independent, it's, well, it does its stuff, doesn't it, Gabriella Peralta?
We're not independent.
No, not yet.
We do have our own government, if that's what you mean. We do have, our own kind of way of doing things, different laws, different things.
And that's why we appreciate you so much being on The Connections, that side of things. We managed to clarify with Phil Leonis about the Star Wars thing. I don't think he was that impressed with Mark Hamill actually going. I think he is. I know.
No, it sort of fell flat on him, didn't it?
He kind of brushed it off in terms of saying it was the equivalent to opening a supermarket. It's insane. Exactly. Sharp intake of breath, Gabriella. He had to go. That's the reason he's not connected. Not just the Skype thing. We just thought, sorry. off.
You're not worth it.
Exactly. Work through that process and set up something completely different. Anyway...
Right, when the government was boasting how many people had seen Mark Hamill on a skywalk, apparently it was like 17 countries, it was broadcast on the news. So
17 countries, exactly.
Something like that, I think it was.
That's more than your average closing down of a Toys R Us store, but still, never mind.
Exactly.
Anyway, the time has now arrived where, having listened to Phil Leonis provide us with the weather update for Lincoln from Los Angeles, California, it's time for the significantly more important weather update for Lincoln from Gibraltar in the Mediterranean.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 9 degrees centigrade, lows of 2 degrees centigrade, mostly dry and bright with a small chance of showers.
Excellent. Just delivered with consummate style, panache, and indeed aplomb.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
After last week's excitement about Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, opening the Sky Bridge, where do we actually go? I mean, is it just a case of it's all right, it's Holy Week now, it's Maundy Thursday, we're very excited that the Prime Minister is actually visiting four countries today, England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Obviously, she's not getting over to Gibraltar.
Busy day, nonetheless.
I would have thought so. Whether she gets out of Newcastle when she's meeting apparently a parents and toddlers group, so I think Ian will probably be doing stuff in there. Anyway, it's nice to see you.
Take Ollie and Ava.
Would have thought so. But what's the situation, indeed, as we approach Easter, Gabriella? Do Gibraltarians actually take Easter eggs? Is it a case of no? No, we don't. We would bother with that because it's all the packaging. That's the problem. You know, I mean, the packaging, let's face it, on the average Easter egg, it's like buying £4 worth of cardboard, isn't it, really? Sorry.
Pretty much, yeah. There's no egg now, Alex. It's just packaging.
It's just a cardboard. Exactly, yeah. So what's happening from your own perspective, Gabriella? Does the Easter Bunny make an appearance, or is it a case of don't talk to me about those pagan rituals? Bear in mind Easter is designed as a Christian festival of rebirth and so on and so forth.
Well, you know what? I have not received a single Easter egg this year. I think it's a sign of my age.
No.
No one's given me one.
Buy one.
But we, you know, you always get Easter eggs when you grow up, and we're quite a Catholic country. So, really, for example, I'm not working today because there's no Chronicle on a Good Friday, so we don't work on a Thursday because there would be no newspaper to produce. Mm. But Good Friday, I don't know, I can't remember how much it was in the UK, but we don't eat meat on a Good Friday. Definitely not. We eat fish, but we won't eat any meat on a Good Friday. And I remember my friends in the UK were like, didn't really follow the tradition as much.
I think it has changed as we become more secular. It's interesting. I was trying to get Good Friday a little bit special from that perspective and actually just take time out to unwind and so on, go to a service if possible. And it's one of the reasons, even though we'll be hearing about the fantastic Alice in Wonderland Easter pantomime that actually launches on Good Friday at the New Lincoln Theatre Royal later in the programme, I thought we'd just ease away from that. But I suppose... It's rather like the whole notion of whatever your kind of faiths or beliefs, etc. Maybe we all need to have just time to reflect and unwind for a time. And there is this sort of intention to do all sorts of things and get sort of worn out, etc. Michelle, thoughts from yourself?
I mean, I was just really interested about the fact that you only eat fish, because in France, on April Fool's Day, they sort of like stick paper fish on each other's backs as like a joke kind of thing. Mm. So I'm just interested to
know. That's why Emmanuel Macron got elected, presumably. They thought it was a mackerel. Much, you know, yeah. Thought it was a fish. They thought they were actually voting for a fish, and no, they found they got a human being in there. Unbelievable.
Well, it's really interesting to see where that originates from, actually.
Well, fish on Friday, I think, has always been a perspective, certainly within the Catholic tradition, from that point of view, the Roman Catholic onwards. It was then sort of changed, I think, they brought it back in terms of whether you should, you shouldn't, and so on and so forth. But I suppose for good dietary habits and good reasons, actually, it's quite nice to sort of switch to a fish thing, unless, of course, they're unsustainable, in which case don't eat cod. Sorry, that's an important thing for that. Yeah. But no Easter egg for Gabriella is just, this is unbelievable.
No,
I mean,
well, yet. I'm always awful at eating Easter eggs. I think everyone knows that I won't eat them. Because
it's the cardboard you want.
I'd just rather eat a chocolate bar than an Easter egg.
Yeah. I mean, all that fuss of having to fight through just to get to the actual chocolate thing. It's going to create problems, you know, challenges. And obviously, it's chocolate, so Frodo, you'd kill him. So just don't do that, you know. And again, you know, public health warning here, which we need to make quite clear before we head off to Richard Fitzwilliams. If you've got any chocolate and you've got a dog, for God's sake, do not put those two in contact with each other. Otherwise, one is going to end up dead.
Well, it's funny you say that. One year, my dog actually ate an entire Easter egg and he lived. And I have no idea how he survived that ordeal.
Is he a dog?
Because I'm beginning to think maybe he wasn't.
Cat in disguise, yeah.
He was perfectly healthy.
What type of dog is he? Is he a large?
He was a Staffy. And he used to just destroy any human food. Like, if you left biscuits on the counter, he would find a way to eat them.
And what is the state of consciousness of Frodo today? Has he woken up? Is it a case of it is Maundy Thursday? I must actually sort of be ready to actually sort of start the thing in earnest? Or is it a case of, nah, whatever?
Much like me, he had difficulty waking up this morning, like I do every day. But
it's only 9 a.m. in Gibraltar, so don't worry.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's an hour difference. Yeah. But he got up eventually, wandered to the kitchen, ate his food, lied down in bed again, like in his bed, and then has kind of wandered off into the house, and I'm going to have to walk him soon, so I'll have to wake up for that.
It's a life. It's a dog's life. Really.
It's like having a baby that doesn't speak.
Not quite as messy, I wouldn't have thought,
and they
really.
They don't grow up.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, you know,
they don't leave the house.
Well, they do grow up after a fashion.
They don't get a job and provide for themselves.
Yes, that's true. Oh, they're Lassie, I suppose.
Very true, Alex. Good reference.
Rin-tin-tin. There are areas.
Or of police dogs.
Exactly. So come on, Frodo, stop lazy. Come on, you lazy, good-for-nothing soul. Just get out there and earn your mistress a keep. Yeah, exactly.
He's going to be 4 years old in August.
Well, that's 28. Exactly. So there's no excuse.
About time he got out of the house.
Exactly. Anyway, we'll address this and more in future weeks, no doubt. But Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, I have, thank you.
And are you back and ready to join us again next week when hopefully we'll have Skype connected and Phil will have the joy of connecting with you as opposed to having to literally be bumped off, not in a kind of metaphorical mafia-like way, just because obviously we couldn't fit two people on at the same time because we had a Skype challenge. So will you be back next week?
Yes, I will.
Alone.
Felt, Shaley, that secretly Richard Fitzwilliams, his heart is in the 90s and the noughties, where he'd probably be raving at some wonderful external country location there with all sorts of wonderful fizzy concoctions sort of brewing through the whole system, and he'd be making body shapes and striking poses and such like. I don't know, maybe it's just one of my fantasies. Good morning, Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, sir?
I am well, of course, approach Easter, and if you saw my work table, there are 2 dozen folders linked to various aspects of the royal wedding in front of me. So, wow. Working hard on it, every bit of it, because the royal baby, and then the Commonwealth Conference, all sorts of interesting things. Oh, indeed.
See, that, Shaley, is what you call a consummate royal correspondent professional.
Indeed.
Quite simply, a consummate royal correspondent professional who at this moment in time is about to head into two particular lines. And again, Shaley, I think I'll offer you the chance of saying, do you want to go unsane with Richard Fitzwilliams, or do you want to go to the square?
Let's go for unsane.
Nice choice. The choice that actually Kasia Nicklin, when she made her debut on the programme last night, said, ooh, unsane, looking forward to seeing that. I said, you should listen to what Richard Fitzwilliams has to say about it first. That's your cue,
and
Richard.
Well, indeed, yes, and I have to say that it's good to see Steven Soderbergh, who you think back to Sex, Lives and Videotape, which is an absolutely marvellous film. That's a long time ago now, and Soderbergh has ups and downs, and here he's back on absolutely marvellous form, especially since Claire Foy, who I'm deeply touched by as Anne Boleyn in Wolf Hall, and also, of course, playing the Queen in The Crown, in this, it's called a psychological horror thriller, and I think that's a very good description of it, because it's not a conventional horror film. It's not the sort of film that's going to make the likes of me look at it through a closed fist watching the top right-hand corner of the screen. No, 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 this is a gripping, it's an intelligent, it's hard-hitting, and it's filmed partly in handheld cameras. In fact, visually, it's very disconcerting. Sawyer Valenti, played by Claire Foy, is doing well in the new job, but she has a fear. And that fear is of being stalked. For 2 years, she's been afraid that someone's stalking her. And when a one-night stand goes disastrously wrong, she realizes she needs, or believes she needs help, and fatefully, when she goes to hospital, she signs documents which enable her to be confined against her will in its psychiatric ward. When she resists and starts fighting and becomes violent, of course she wants to get out, she attacks a fellow patient paid by Juno Temple, for example, then that 24 hours is increased to a week. And she subsequently discovers, or does she, that a medical orderly there is her stalker, played by Joshua Leonard. Is he deliberately overdosing her, or is she making it all up? And the head nurse doesn't seem to realize that this character is an extremely weird one, so she becomes very close to one of the inmates, Nate, played by Jay Farrow, who tells her that the hospital count commit the same so that they get insurance companies to pay up, and starts to comfort her, and then lends her his cell phone, and she is able to call her mother, played by Amy Irving, who instantly comes in and demands for her to be let loose, but you see, it's not so simple. The police are unwilling to act. Her lawyer advises, and she's already signed documents, that she should stay for the week. And what about the stalker inside? I mean, this is a movie which succeeds because it has you on the edge of your seat for an awful lot of it. It's wonderfully eerie. Visually, you're taken into various parts of this hospital, and indeed, what happens in the basement, I mean, that is something that anyone in finding out going to see this movie, you're constantly told as about talked about the basement and so forth. When you actually discover what happens there, it's, well, shall we say, the strength of this movie is always believable. And it's an excellent cast, therefore I thought it was superb. I love Jay Farrow as a sympathetic patient, Nate. Even Matt Damon briefly appears, and the policeman, and it's tense, it stretches you, it's a violent movie, but it doesn't rely so much on shocks, but on subtlety. And so, visually, you're undergoing a very strange experience, and believe me, you're watching somebody who is, of course, or you believe initially, is very, very disturbed. And from the beginning until, shall we say, the rather unusual ending, this will keep you, I think, extremely uneasy. It's a very uneasy movie, of course. There's this, the theme of how patients are ripped off by institutions and so forth, but far more than that, how unstable is she, and what is actually happening in the hospital, and climactically, this may give you a shock or two.
Sex, Lies and Unsanity, perhaps? Shady McKenzie, what do you think?
Yeah, no, this looks really good, and I'm definitely a fan of Claire Foy as an actress. But no, it looks really disturbing. It looks like one of those ones where you're constantly doubting what is wrong and what's right and what's going on. And the fact that it was shot on an iPhone 7 really sort of interests me.
Bear in mind the 48-hour film challenge, and it looks as though Kasia Nicklin is taking that challenge, and she might be in contact with you to actually do that 48-hour film challenge in a week or so's time for Sci-Fi London, the film festival. And as Louis Savvy said, what's the worst that can happen at the end of the weekend? You've made a movie.
Very true.
Sorry, a little bit of plug there, Richard, for another festival that we're promoting. But it looks a thumbs up from that point of view. We head on to not the Circle, not the parallelogram, not the notion of trapezoidal artist, but the square.
The square is a work of art. The film is as well, I have to say, but and it's set in an art gallery in Stockholm called X Royal, a hilarious send-up of the idea. It's a former royal palace, but also it's showing, putting it mildly, art that could be considered by those who do not appreciate it to be pretentious and indeed rather outrageous, but of course there are those who believe that loft contemporary art has deep and significant meaning. The square is in fact a new artwork, and it is a sanctuary, I quote, of trust and caring. Within it, we all share equal rights and obligations. Now, this movie, nobody who sees it will ever forget it. It is absolutely outrageous, it is merciless, and it is murderously witty. I say that because it satirizes the absurdities, the idiocies, and the self-importance of the intellectual elite. It has a lot to say. It's 2.5 hours, and it has to be said, half an hour too long. But having said that, this is something that for some 2 hours of that, I rocked from side to side with mirth. It really is very funny. It is visceral. It is absolutely outrageous. We meet the curator of the gallery initially. He's one of the intellectual elite, of course, and Christian, and a very fine performance. And he is celebrating new donations to this remarkable gallery. It is indeed a huge palace, and indeed it's a very, very significant cultural monument. He's being interviewed by a journalist, Anne, played by Elizabeth Moss, and, well, he's obviously sued because he says very little, and he has to explain in jargon that, I have to say, it's very funny what some art means when, frankly, you could say it means very little. Then he becomes involved as he leaves the building in an incident where his wallet and iPhone are missing. One of his people who works for him is able to track it down to a block of flats, and here's the idea. You accuse every inhabitant of that block of flats of stealing it, putting a note through their letterbox, and hopefully then you'll get it back if you specify where they should send it. Otherwise, you could call the police. But what about the others? I mean, there are, you're basically accusing everyone of being a thief. All sorts of interesting things happen there. And then there's a party which livens up, and he opens up the wing of the family, of the building that used to be used by the royal family. And the journalist is there. And when he and Anne and Christian have sex, well, I mean, there's an absolutely unforgettable scene. I have to mention it here, where they actually have a tug of war over the condom he's used. I've never seen anything like it, and I was splitting myself with mirth, not to mention the fact that there is a certain animal in her flat at the time. You know,
as USA Today said, Richard, there has never been a Palme d'Or winner quite like this.
There most certainly, yes, I was coming to that, in fact, there most certainly has not. Because, for example, the public relations staff are trying to plan for the square to, well, you have an important artwork, you want to publicize it. Now, what they use to publicize it, I think I'm going to leave for those who find this funny, and it is absolutely hilarious. It's completely outrageous. There are certain scenes in it that, I mean, offensive isn't the word. Hideously tasteless, hideously and wonderfully tasteless. It's unbelievable. There's a scene where an artist, Julian, played by Dominic West, he is giving a talk about his artwork, and there's some man with Tourette's syndrome in the audience, and he shouts out obscenities. Now, I would add that there's also a dinner where there's an absolutely outrageous, shall we say, living person who pretends to be a living sculpture who intimidates the audience. Or the Tourette's syndrome incident and the living sculpture at the dinner incident were based on actual incidents where, for example, a man pretended to be a dog in Stockholm and attacked some of the guests and so forth. You've got a mind here, quite extraordinary mind, who created this movie. And frankly, I have to say that, I have never seen anything like it.
It's thumbs up to Ruben Östlund, is effectively.
Ruben Östlund. There's so much in this film that perhaps time does not permit me to continue, but the message of the movie, I mean, you almost take a scalpel to the intellectual pretensions of an elite who regard themselves as above any law and who could behave as they like and who exhibit what could be called work.
Inappropriate content.
You might say that. I mean, when Anne comes to question the gallery director, Christian, after the unforgettable scene in her bedroom, it's when she's asking him questions, it's almost impossible to hear because the ridiculous artworks in the gallery are making so much noise, this sort of thing. And also, there's a young boy who's much affected by the letters which have been put through all the letterboxes, and he decides to take things matters into his own hands, since his parents have blamed him for being a thief, and track Christian down. I mean, what happens in this movie, you have never seen anything like it. I have never seen anything like it. And
in your life, as David Attenborough said in Dr. Dolittle.
In my life, I've never seen anything like it in my life, sang Richard Attenborough.
In Dr. Dolittle, exactly. Precisely.
He was talking about the push me, pull you.
Exactly.
And the push me, pull you might well have been the animal, you have to see which one it is, in Anne's bedroom in the unforgettable scene that
Exactly. In the square. It has riveted itself onto...
What happens in the square, I'm not revealing.
What happens in the square stays in the square, Richard. Does that appeal?
That's a very good saying, Alex. I like it. It actually does, weirdly enough. Art is something that's always really interested me. And recently I went to see the Gursky exhibition at the Hayward in London. And it's always really interesting how artists can take something essentially mundane and turn it into something beautiful. And this film looks weirdly attractive.
Putting it mildly, something mundane can indeed become something beautiful. I absolutely agree with you. I think you will find a lot of what happens here, of course, is symbolic. And what it's saying about our society is that its values are so crazed, so mad, so absolutely absurd that, perhaps we need a new form of square to straighten ourselves out.
A post-Brexit square, that's what we're looking for.
Oh, my goodness me. Brexit is... Yes, I will restrain myself.
Exactly, you've got to hold back.
The square's already been broken.
Exactly, hold
from that. But if you see the square, I think I can absolutely guarantee you'll have seen nothing like it. And the Palme d'Or was awarded. I mean, this is a great surprise at Cannes because people didn't think it could win. It has flaws. It is too long. And 2.5 hours is nearly half an hour too long, to be quite honest. And some of the part of its message is a bit dissipated by some of the climactic scenes, but no matter, it will stay with you. What happens in that square, what happens in that gallery, and what happens in the mind of Christian, quite extraordinary. Good cast too. Austin's direction,
And I would predict that next week we'd be looking at another form of unreality with Ready Player One, perhaps. Who knows? Could be a possibility.
We might very well be. Exactly.
Nothing like the square. Shaley, last two questions for Richard, please.
Nothing compares to the square.
No.
And have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning, Richard?
Well, yes, I'm delighted you've just said nothing compares to the square. I can see it's growing on you, as it were. The square is enlarging itself, perhaps to include you in those who appreciate what it has to say. But how will you interpret what it says?
Excellent. And can we rely on you for next Thursday?
Emphatically. Two words that Sam Goldman would say.
Be your toy, just hoping you will play. Without the hope, my body starts to fail. Memories fade, but the scars still linger. Goodbye, my friend. Will I ever love again? Memories fade, but the scars still linger. I cannot grow.
this be the theme for a Newcastle United supporter? Memories fade, but the pain still lingers on. Never mind. Ian, it'll all be splendid. It'll be wonderful. Look, what excitement you've got on Tyneside today. A visit by the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister of Great Britain, Theresa May, is actually going to be in Tyneside. Have you got your best bib and tucker on?
I didn't know she was coming, actually.
She's coming to visit you in...
She's on a tour, isn't she? But it's isn't it 1 year today before we leave Europe?
Well, we can't really
I suppose she didn't tour Britain a bit more when she was doing the election.
Ian, first of all, we can't leave Europe. We are part of Europe, continentally, geographic shift, etc. We're leaving the European Union in terms of the customs. So let's be... Well, I'm, you're a journalist, Ian. You know the importance of being precise.
I'm not writing a legal document here, you know.
You may not be, but our listener could well be in the process of just getting a second or third draft.
I think our listener knew perfectly well what I was referring to.
Well, we had hoped that John Wenham would be joining us, but clearly he's decided, I don't want to talk about ball tampering, even though I was an umpire. I'm sorry, John. You know, the studio is open. It's awaiting your arrival in the studio. He's probably locked in. He's locked into his whole notion of actually doing his updates that he's just thought, oh, what the hey, I can't be bothered. Peel me a grape. It's okay. Might not even be listening. But I presume then you won't be taking Ollie and Obo along to the Mothers and Toddlers group to possibly actually say hello to Mrs. Theresa May.
Okay. I asked them where they wanted to go and they said meow. So.
That's okay.
Just meow, no way.
No. That's very good. You see, every week Ian demonstrates another critical skill that he's brought to the fore. And there is another one.
He was bilingual, did he?
He can speak feline. Let us move on to something you possibly might have experienced back in the day, Ian. Parents secretly dreading Easter as the cold snap continues. Oh, you see, John's just passing the studio there. Can you wave at John Wenham? Look, wave at him there. Is he going to come in?
Yes, he's coming in.
Would you like to open the door, Shaley? Otherwise,
indeed.
He won't be able to get in. We'll move from this notion of, yeah, it's ironic, really, sometimes we invite people into the studio but lock our doors. It's so much fun. It's April the 1st, obviously, on Sunday. And bear in mind, you can only be fooled before midday. After midday, April Fool is past and gone. You're the fool and I'm none. Just wanted to flag that up there. Quarter of parents are secretly dreading the Easter holidays, blaming bad weather and the cost of keeping the kids entertained as the top stressors. The average family expects to spend £119 on keeping their kids entertained over the holidays, with an extra £74 on food.
Is this over the Easter holidays as a school, as in the school holidays, or just over Easter?
This is over the Easter
period. So it's about 4 or 5 days.
Exactly. So we were speaking to actress Charlie Brooks to talk us about her thoughts on this whole system. But did you ever find Easter stressful, Ian? Or was it a case of, no, I don't have anything to do with...
I wasn't when it was happening, actually, until one of my daughters told me she couldn't do something because it was Good Friday tomorrow.
Anyway, that's obviously killed that topic then, which is fair enough.
Why do they keep on moving Easter about anyway?
Ian, if you go back
to... I mean, after December the 25th every year for Christmas Day.
If you'd allow me to speak as opposed to talking over me, I'd give you a sort of worthwhile sort of line. Thank you, Ian. You know, it's good manners. Let's face it, it is radio. But in terms of the original system, go back in time to the notion of the Russian Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, and so on, and you'll find that Easter is a movable feast because it's all to do with the moon, the feast of the Passover. Go back to the Jewish faith, go back to a whole range of things. There are all manner of reasons for that. Even though in the 1920s Parliament tries to actually make it a fixed time slot, that's still on the statute books. It was never actually put into law. So it continues to move around like a wonderful moon circling the planet Earth, which is what we're living on. Good morning, John Wenham. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much indeed.
You're here today to join in the Ian Lennox slot. Ian, of course, author and creator of Gentlemen and Players. Right. Which I believe you've read.
Careful, Johnny's in a right mood today.
Yes, sir.
But primarily because of the fun things that Australia have been getting up to in terms of ball tampering against those lovely, wonderful South Africans, of which Shaley, of course, technically is one. Are you not, Shaley?
I am indeed.
Born there? Exactly. So, I mean, you would have been outraged. So what the heck are these Australians doing, tampering their balls for our cricket tests?
It's shocking, Alex, that they would go to such lengths. Mm-hmm.
So, John, what's your view on this scandal? And do you think the manager should also have fallen on his sword, or is it a case of, no, he didn't know anything about it? Why would he? As Darren Goff said, he's only the manager.
Well, he's the manager, but he's in charge of the team, isn't he?
Right.
And let's face it, he should know what's going on amongst his players.
I think the days of responsibility for these sort of things are long gone.
Well, this is a problem. I mean, I hate...
People are dragged kicking and screaming to resignations now.
Yes.
There's no...
But, I mean, I hate cheating in any sport, whatever the sport, whether it be drugs or ball tamperings or whatever. I hate it, and I don't think it is necessary. But the trouble is nowadays, it's win at all costs.
Yes, it's got like that, hasn't it?
And
the pressure's on the athletes. And, well, even when you get... I mean, the most startling, I thought, was in the athletics. It seemed that... tampering in Russia was at government level.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Let's keep to the sport of cricket. No. Let's keep to the sport of cricket, because let's face it, we like Vladimir Putin. I'm sure he likes us as well. Let's move on to John. As an umpire, I asked you the question when we passed like ships in the night just outside the university on Tuesday. Had you ever experienced or has anybody ever tried ball tampering in a match that you've been umpiring?
No. Not as far as I know.
No, exactly. That's the key thing.
We do keep a good eye on the ball, and we have a look at it after each wicket has fallen.
It has been suggested
to the umpire.
Yeah.
And we look at it then and make sure it's okay.
But that was one thing that was suggested, that surely umpires are doing that. You get the ball at the end of each over.
At the end of each over. Okay. The players are allowed to prepare their ball for the coming over, which is, and they're allowed to polish the shiny side.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're not allowed to put grit on the rough side, or sugar, or sandpaper, or whatever.
Hmm.
There are other ways, more gentle ways of cheating, I suppose. You get...
Match fixing, I
suppose. Throw the ball on the ground and they return to the wicket, so it scuffs the thing up.
Deliberate no balls, that's another line.
If it's a deliberate no ball...
Mm. How can you know that? It might just be a bowler.
Do you know that? By the way that for instance, overstepping the mark, is the way the bowler runs up, whether he's taken it 5 yards... 2 yards off his run-up. You can judge it, and you can only really judge it from square leg.
Yes,
because, let's face it, the...
The umpire's looking down the wicket.
Well, that's right. The umpire in question, who calls the no-ball, has also got to look out for the likes of unfair ball, which is anything above waist high nowadays. New rules come in, new law has come in that... A bowler is allowed one warning and one warning only.
Hmm.
After that, he's asked to be taken off the bowling.
Is my memory playing tricks with me? I seem to recall some English cricketers, test players and county players, talking quite openly about tampering with the ball.
Yes, in the days of Mike Atherton, when Mike Atherton was captain of England, in fact, he was had up for... Well, shall we say reprimanded is a better word.
Mm-hmm.
Reprimanded for having some agent in it or something in his pocket that was roughing up the ball.
Yeah.
But nothing was really made of it. Mike Atherton, well, let's face it, is a few years ago now.
But, John, surely that's the actual solution. Wouldn't it be do away with pockets? Don't give cricketers any pockets. Sew up those pockets so they can't actually sort of slip anything untoward in those pockets. See, Shaley, you're nodding on that one, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I really, really do agree.
Where do the likes of bowlers put their, their handkerchiefs and...
Up the sleeves.
Up their sleeves? Well, they go wear short sleeves nowadays, don't they?
Well, they will be slaves to fashion.
Yes, so there's a point to think. I mean,
they could put zips on the pockets, so they've actually opened the pockets. They couldn't be surreptitious about it.
Well, that's true.
And put a camera on every player, constantly being
watched. You may laugh at that, but that's just about it.
Exactly.
It was just suicide what they tried.
Well,
At a test match, because I don't know how many cameras are at these games now, but far more than used to be.
Does it put the result of the Ashes, does it make them null and void now? Effectively, forget it, you know, don't forget what happened in New Zealand. Ultimately, we can write off the result of the Ashes.
I'm surprised somebody hasn't called us to write off the referendum over them.
No, it can't, because there's no proof that there was any ball tampering during the Ashes series.
No.
I mean, put it this way.
It's been and gone, hasn't it? You've just got to move on these things eventually, haven't you?
I suppose what video footage there is of that Ashes series could be reviewed.
Let's face it, why was there any need for the cheat?
Whether anything would be
Ian,
picked up.
Where's your support? I know you still actually take it very hard in terms of what happened to Durham, but you've got
to get behind.
It's bad enough John Wenham is in a state of despair because Kevin Peterson is actually finally retiring, and you know John has been a massive KP fan for so long.
Every spectator didn't have to deal with him, would be. He's one of the most illuminating cricketers I've ever seen.
Well, there we are, you see. And just finally, returning to the Australia scenario, Coach Darren Lehman says that the trio, who indeed have been banned for a year, that's Steve Smith and Deputy David Warner, together with Cameron Bancroft, they are not bad people, but made a grave mistake.
Wasn't it Warner who attacked Rooney in a nightclub?
It was Warner.
Because he's rather good at his job
Rooney,
and didn't like him.
Rooney is a footballer who plays for Everton. Yes. Okay,
I'm getting old, you know.
The excitement of Theresa May visiting Tyneside.
Perhaps Warner's now reckoned, sort of cottoned on that Root's best friend is certain Ben Stokes.
Yeah, but Ben's back. Although he didn't do too well against New Zealand recently. Well, close, but never mind.
He's not had any cricket to play, has
And so we've concluded the official statement on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with our panel of experts there, John Wenham and Ian Lennox, and I'm sure that the combined Australian and indeed British cricket teams will, and indeed South African cricket governing bodies will be delighted to access that. Listen again on the podcast, gentlemen. Thank you. Coming up in the second hour of the programme, we've got Stephanie Romaszewski talking about sleep and students and sleep and so on. Emma Tinson is back with us. Yay, go Emma! And we've got EastEnders actress Charlie Brooks joining us, who I believe played Janine.
She did indeed.
In that awesome series, EastEnders. And we'll also be having a short 10-minute little look at the rehearsals from the New Lincoln Theatre Royal, all about the Easter pantomime, Alice in Wonderland. But now, Shaylee, I know you're keen to put those last two questions to the keeper of Ollie and Obo, the person who basically is allowed by Ollie and Obo to actually play with us every Thursday. In a kind of telephonic manner, of course. That would be young Ian. Off you go, please, Shaylee.
Young Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
I have indeed.
Excellent.
Nice.
And will you be back next Thursday?
I do hope so.
Marvellous.